touch or the scent of a sound or the strength of an oak roots deep in the ground. The wonder of flowers to be covered and then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again. Or to fly to the sun without burning a wing. To lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing. To have all these things in our memory thought and the youth to come.
Wanna take a ride? Well, call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0900. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network.
It certainly is. Good morning, everybody. I am Art Bell, and I'd like to welcome a couple of new affiliates. That's right. Coming in now to make sure that we have blanket coverage of the Atlanta market, Atlanta, Georgia. In addition to WGSC AM, our affiliate in Atlanta, I'd like to welcome WMXV, they're 105.7 in Atlanta, and I'd also like to welcome WHEL-FM, they're 105.1 in Atlanta. So whether you're on the AM dial or the FM dial, wherever you are, north, south, east, west from Atlanta, you can hear us. Try it for yourself. That's WMVX-FM 105.7 and WHEL-FM all in Atlanta. WHEL is 105.1, so take your choice. We're here. Coming up in a moment, internationally recognized as the man who brought virtual reality into the World Wide Web, Mark Pesce has been exploring the frontiers of the future for two decades. The author of four books, Pesce is widely known as both a technologist and a visionary, with a unique ability to translate abstract concepts into concrete explanations. We need that here, don't we? Mainstream publications such as Forbes, ASAP, Fast Company, Wired, and the New York Times have profiled him and his views on the future. A well-respected journalist, she has written for Wired, Feed Magazine, Salon, and numerous other periodicals. In October of 2000, Ballantine Books published Pesce's latest book, The Playful World, How Technology is Transforming Our Imagination, which used popular children's toys as a launching point for detailed examination of artificial intelligence, nanotechnology, and virtual reality. Oh, my. Now, she lives in Los Angeles, where he's hard at work on his next book, already churning out another one, folks, The Battle for the Living Room. Microsoft, Sony, and the Secret History of War in Computer Entertainment, which is going to be released later this year, published next year, I guess, actually, next year. But we'll no doubt pry some information about all of that from him as well. This should be very, very interesting. Coming right up. Would you like to feel 10 years younger in 10 weeks? Now there's proof. The effects of aging can be slowed down and even reversed with HGH, human growth hormone. For some time now, you've heard me talk about the incredible age-reversing benefits of HGH. Well, according to thousands of articles, higher HGH levels can help you look and feel younger. That's why I take Ultimate HGH, a natural formula to help boost my body's own production of HGH. If your goal is to help improve energy, stamina, lose unwanted fat, diminish wrinkles, enhance memory, immune function, and vision, then Ultimate HGH is for you too. Why let Mother Nature get the best of you? Call today and order Ultimate HGH. And when you order two bottles of Ultimate HGH, you get the third absolutely free, about $33 a month. Now, that's a tremendous savings off the typical $100 a month for comparable products. Plus, with your order, you'll receive a free book on HGH, a $20 value, absolutely free. So, call my good friends at Great American Products and order Ultimate HGH today at 1-800-557-4627. That's 1-800-557-4627. 1-800-557-4627.
Are you losing your hair? Is that bald spot getting bigger? Has your hair been looking thinner? Here's Dr. Gordon, medical director at the Hair and Skin Treatment Center in New York, with some exciting news. What makes people lose their hair is a bad body chemical called dihydrotestosterone, commonly known as DHT. At our center, we have developed Avacor, an all-natural herbal treatment that stops DHT from attacking your hair follicle. You start regrowing new hair in the balding areas guaranteed. In 5 years of clinical testing, Avacor shows a 90% success rate in both men and women. Avacor is all natural and completely safe and effective. Stop your hair loss and start regrowing a full, healthy head of hair today. Call 800-879-9950. See how this remarkable, risk-free treatment can help you regrow your hair. Call 800-879-9950. That's 800-879-9950.
Well, for my Canadian friends, I have no idea what happened to the sacred garbage can, but they weren't there at the beginning of the break. They were programmed to be, but the stupid computer didn't run it. All right, now we're going to switch gears, and we're going to go from the world of big to the world of small, the world of real to the world of surreal, I guess, with Mark Pesce. Mark, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Art.
As we begin tonight, just before we start on your material, you did happen to hear the first hour of the program, right?
I did.
Uh-huh. Any thoughts on, collectively, how that hit you?
Well, I've been aware of the research on Lake Vostok for some time, and I knew that they were sending down the probe, and I also know that they canceled the probe very suddenly. I had heard that it was for environmental concerns, that they didn't want to pollute the lake, but that's all that I'd heard about it. I hadn't heard anything about the magnetic anomaly, and that's very interesting.
And does all of that regarding who's coming out, and the fact they won't give medical reasons and all that, pretty weird, huh?
It's a little concerning. You'd really want to have as much openness in an international environment as possible.
Hmm. Anyway, we're going to switch gears, and we're going to talk about, all kinds of things. Where do you want to begin? I've got a ton of material here, so...
Well, maybe we should start with getting small and talk about nanotechnology.
All right, good. By the way, I heard there was a story running on CNN, not that this in any way relates, but I guess Intel's releasing the Pentium 4, and it'll be 1.7 gigahertz in speed.
Right, and that's really what we're starting to see now, the numbers that started off when I was programming computers. When they first came out, they ran at, say, a megahertz or two, and I think people who remember 20 years ago can remember that being a very speedy machine. And, of course, we're under the influence of something called Moore's Law. This was a law that was developed by one of the pioneers at Intel, Gordon Moore. In 1965, he drew a little chart, and he said, it looks like about every 18 months we're getting twice as good at making things go fast.
Yep, but I thought they'd run into a brick wall. And when do they run into that brick wall with current technology?
So far, every time someone says we've run into a brick wall, someone finds a way around the brick wall. Just in the last 6 months, since my book was published, there have been three very interesting developments, and people can find these on the website playfulworld.com. First off, folks at Lawrence Berkeley Laboratories in California announced that they made a transistor, which is the basic building part of a computer, out of a buckyball. And a buckyball is this very weird form of carbon. We think of carbon as graphite, pencil lead, or diamonds, or coal. Well, a buckyball actually looks like a little geodesic dome. It's 60 carbon atoms that are all linked together into a little sphere. And so we can now make a transistor out of 60 individual atoms of material.
Huh.
Well, not to be outdone, at the beginning of this year, Intel announced that they were making transistors, which we won't see in production chips for about 5 years or so, But these transistors were only 3 atoms deep.
3 atoms deep?
And not to be outdone, but the Japanese have now announced
what?
That they've made a single-atom transistor.
A single-atom transistor.
So to give you an idea, I did a little back-of-the-envelope calculation before the program tonight. If you take a single ounce of water, there are 1 million billion billion atoms in a single ounce of water. Now, if you thought of each one of these atoms potentially being a computing element, then a single ounce of computing element could have 1 million billion billion transistors. Now, the Pentium 4, which you just mentioned, has only 42 million transistors, running only at 1.7 gigahertz.
Only? Well, that's pretty I'm sitting here with 233 megahertz machines. It's time for me to update. I'm looking at them kind of strangely. I think they know I'm looking at them that way because they're going to be replaced soon. This is when I jumped. They said on CNN that these were going to be as cheap as, what did I hear, $325 a piece in lots of 1,000. Now, that's going to turn the industry upside down, and that's only the beginning. Only the beginning.
Only the beginning. It's reported by folks who are really working very hard on the nanocomputer, which is to build a computer out of these atomic scale components, that what we'll see are computers that are 1 million million times faster than what we see today.
When we have that, what will we have?
Well, what we'll have is really a world in which the idea of computing isn't something that sits, say, on a desktop or in a computer or on a PDA or in your cell phone. But in fact, the idea of computing has thoroughly integrated itself into the environment, that there's no place in the environment which isn't active, which isn't listening, which isn't computing.
The clothes we wear, the everything around us, everything virtually, environmentally, will be subject to be computerized.
Exactly. And this has a big upside in the sense that you could even put them in the air you breathe so that every time you breathed in, you'd be breathing in some of these nanocomputers. And these nanocomputers, when they're inside of you, could then say, take a look at your DNA, make sure that it's okay. Take a look at your arteries and make sure that there aren't plaques building up in them. Read your blood pressure. And you breathe them out again, they beam off to a transmitter, and your doctor would get the results of how you're doing on that day.
God, you'll have to excuse me, but breathing in little computers that would then do a report on your medical condition, or maybe even better yet, go in and correct some medical condition. It's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable, but if you take a look at the arrow of technology, where we've been going since the integrated circuit or the transistor was developed, you see this steady, very natural progression, this Moore's Law progression. Moore's Law has to bottom out somewhere between 2010 and 2015, because we will have gotten down to the atom. And already, because of this research in Japan and at Intel and Hewlett-Packard, which recently announced that they could make wires that were 3 nanometers, 3 billionths of a meter across, that's literally another single atom wire, that these technologies are coming online. They're no longer pie in the sky. They're no longer what ifs. But now it's a matter of how do we use them.
Well, I mean, aside from what you just told me, when we get there, what else can we expect? How will it change our lives? Yes, breathe them in, breathe them out. I got that one. But how else will it change our lives? What will these computers be able to do that we can't do now?
There will be a lot more in the sense of a computing fabric. So the entire environment will be computing fabric. So your home will be an active object. Everything that you look around and see and think of as a static object, a book, a chair, a lamp, each one of these are in fact going to be intensely active objects. So if you want your chair to become a lamp or your book to become a bed, they'll be transformable in those very basic sorts of ways. So everything we think of as being solid in the material world is being fixed in the material world.
You mean, so if I say, hey, book, it's bedtime, my book then becomes a bed.
Becomes the bed. Or perhaps the bookcase flows into your bed. The book becomes the bedspread.
Really? Let me yank you back a little bit to today. This is the BBC News, published, well, as a matter of fact, it was about a year ago, even 2 years ago, a biological computer born. That's the headline. Biological computer born. At the moment, the device can perform simple sums. The team calls the novel calculator the Leechulator.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know about this. But
yes.
Their aim is to devise a new generation of fast and flexible computers that can work out for themselves how to solve a problem rather than having to be told exactly what to do. Now, this is a computer made out of leeches.
Yes.
Do the same rules apply if you follow technological development into the biologic side of things?
Absolutely. What we're seeing is that nanotechnology as a field is being driven by two directions. One direction is called molecular assembly. These are chemists and physicists who take a single atom and put it next to another atom and build structures up. The other avenue of approach is molecular biology, like these folks in England who are taking a look at the molecular biology of the leech, understanding it, working out how to duplicate it.
Precisely.
Because nature is nanotechnology. It's something we don't think about. We don't think about biology as a branch of engineering, but if you ask someone who's working on the human genome, or now the proteome, how genes become the proteins that make us up, they understand it as an engineering discipline now. So you have these convergent trends of molecular computing and molecular biology, and they end up in the same place.
Well, do they now? They're talking about this. They didn't say, we made it. They said the biological computer was born. Will we get to the stage where we're saying that Intel, instead of announcing 1.7 gigahertz, will announce a birth?
Well, given the current trends in artificial intelligence, which this clearly feeds into,
yes,
that's a much more sort of natural position to take. For the 50 years that artificial intelligence research has been done, for the first 40 of them, people really thought that you could just cram a lot of facts and figures and decisions into it, and it would be a model of human intelligence. And in fact, that failed utterly. We could make a computer be a good chess player, but only because chess isn't really a good gauge of human intelligence.
Uh-huh. How do we define consciousness, Mark?
It's really the ability to be aware of the self, the environment, and the ability to react to it flexibly.
Are we going to be able to get a computer there?
We've started. There are already two projects going on at MIT, and there are, again, links to this on the Playful World website. One is called COG and one is called Kismet. I think Kismet is the more interesting one. Kismet looks like a large sort of Furby head. So it's got expressive eyes, eyebrows, ears. And the eyes can see you and the ears can hear you. And it's been given a model of the nervous system of a two-week-old baby.
Oh, really?
And a two-week-old baby wants to be excited. It wants to be played with. It wants to be engaged.
That's right.
And so if you do these things with Kismet, if you take a Slinky out and play with Kismet, Kismet will be delighted. It'll be happy. If you ignore Kismet, it'll be sad. If you take the Slinky and perhaps move it very rapidly in front of Kismet's face, Kismet will become afraid and withdraw. And
really?
Kismet wasn't really engineered to have these kinds of behaviors. It's not a program.
Wait a minute. Back up. What is Kismet?
Kismet is a robotic head with actual eyes that can see,
yes,
ears that can hear.
Yes, but what is the processor?
It's no single one processor. It's a gang of them where each part is working independently. And the overall is to generate a sense of how it is right now, how it's feeling.
Who has made this?
This is MIT's Artificial Intelligence Lab.
And so they put together a gang of processors.
Yes.
And they've got this thing now.
They've had it for 2 years.
They've had it for 2 years. And you're telling me it expresses real emotions. How are they measuring that? How do you see those emotions manifest?
What they do is they've given it facial expressions.
They have?
Yes. In part, that's to make it easy for the humans who are working with it to understand what's going on.
Of course. Oh, my God. Really? I had no idea this even existed.
It's the beginning of emotional computing, and what we've really come to understand about how we think. Human beings have had a bit of a misconception. If we think about science fiction, creatures like Mr. Spock, who's a Vulcan, who's considered to be sort of the paragon of reason, because he's not emotional at all.
Yep.
Well, what we've learned by studying human beings, and particularly human beings who have had some sort of brain disorder which doesn't allow them to experience the full range of emotion.
Yes.
They can't think as well as the rest of us.
Why not? Why not?
Because,
why does emotion do anything but fog the logic process?
It actually aids us in making decisions. It helps us to sort, prioritize.
Right, but good decisions or bad decisions? Emotions sometimes make people make bad decisions, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely, yet at the same time, they're key to the decision-making process, the key to understanding, to grabbing the entire concept of what's going on.
Really?
Whereas reason alone is not enough. And this was one of the failures of artificial intelligence as previously constructed.
No kidding. So the emotional part of it is actually all important to the progression toward what we really will call artificial intelligence.
Exactly.
The dawning of awareness.
And so the closer we get to something like artificial intelligence, the more we start to see that it's going to need to closely resemble human intelligence.
Mark, do we really want to go there?
Well, I'm not worried overall that we're going to build a super intelligent creation. I think what we'll do is we'll get progressively closer and closer to something that's human-like in its own intelligence.
Uh-huh.
And if we do that, then what we'll be doing is basically be building another kind of human intelligence. Not exactly like, but very close to our own.
That's getting awfully close to creation itself in a way, isn't it?
I'm not sure if it's creation so much as it's us learning. Really, what this is a process of learning about ourselves, and the more that we learn about ourselves, the more we can express it in external forms.
Yeah, but Mark, see, if you have created something capable of emotional decision-making and consciousness, then you've created a being.
There is no question about this, and the most interesting thing is that the team at MIT actually has a woman on staff who's called the robot theologian. Not because the robots have come to believe in God, but because the people who are working with a robot with emotions have to behave ethically toward that creature. And the question is arising now, when is it unethical to turn Kismet off? The question is, it can't be answered yet. Kismet's not so advanced that it would be seen as killing it or hurting it to turn it off. But the question is now being raised.
Well, if it's raised now, then what kind of question do we have when we have awareness, when awareness dawns? And I don't know when that will be. Maybe you can talk to us about when you think that actually might happen. Hold on, Mark. We're at the bottom of the hour. Do you see what kind of roadblocks are ahead? Now, this is Mark's field, so obviously he's protective of it, and I understand that, but how far off from Kismet is the dawning of self-awareness? And then what have we done? We have, I think that we've created, haven't we? Or if not, it wouldn't be many steps to that, but I'd say we created. I want to read more about it? We've got a link. Mark Pesce's website is linked on ours right now. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM. I stopped an old man.